It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 277 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I have a great conversation with James Pruitt, the writer of Mindbender, a terrific horror comic that I think you'll really love, who is also deeply involved with Scout Comics management. We talk about the book and how it came to be, and because it's such a tightly written story, we can't really get into spoilers too much, although we do talk about how we brought the team together and about who the characters are and what we might expect from it in the future. Then we delve into Scout Comics, a company that I'm coming to know real well and really admiring, as well as the fact that he and I are both part of pairs of identical twins, which is a unique experience these days. So I'm sure you're going to be interested in what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast James Pruitt, the writer of a fascinating comic called Mindbender from Scout Comics, a company I'm getting to know recently. How you doing, James?
I'm doing pretty good, Wayne. Thanks for calling.
It's good to talk with you. Why don't you give people kind of the TV guide version of what Mindbender is about?
Well, Mindbender, you know, there's always this rumor about we use 10% of our brain's power. But Mindbender is what happens when you actually expose the other 90% of it. So it deals with the government wants them as a weapon. Basically, what is the way I've looked at it, every child is born this way, but they tend to forget about it, and it goes into the subconscious, and this guy just happened to bring it back out. So he's very powerful.
So what's his name, by the way, the name of the character?
Alex Oberman.
Okay.
Named after my oldest son, by the way.
Oh, cool. Well, let me read the description on the website and stuff like that. It says, Alex was only 7 when he first awakened the power that left him comatose for nearly 16 years, an evolutionary power lying dormant in all mankind, bubbling within the unconscious mind, waiting and yearning to be unleashed, as you were talking. Finally, a young child was able to touch this untapped force, and the results were catastrophic. Those that would use his ability have been awaiting Alex's awakening. Now that wait has ended, and the world will soon learn the true potential of mankind. But will Alex be a vanguard for the world, or will he be responsible for its annihilation? Wow, that's a pretty powerful comic. Where did the concept come from? Were you doing reading on the mind and stuff like that, and this kind of popped up?
Actually, the concept I came up with around 1993, when I first got into the industry. We're doing, my twin brother and I, we co-created Negative Burn with Chuck Moore. And we're just coming with different stories. We formed this studio called Mad Hatter Studio. And it had me, it had Joe, Charles Moore did some DC work. Andrew Robinson was a member. So a lot of people, we started at the same time. So it's kind of like this across the country type of conglomerate. Where we just like shared ideas and everything. So I had this name. Actually, it was called Straight Jacket at first. So I had the name first. I remember thinking about it. I was in San Diego in 1993. So I got the name first, and then I worked a story around it. I was reading at the time about the multiple worlds theory, so it just kind of played with me a little bit. I was trying to think, how can I work with this? And over the years, the name Straightjacket just didn't resonate with me more, so I changed it to Mindbender about a year or two ago. Okay, I thought it was more appropriate. I think Straightjacket kind of limited it to a psychiatrist, to a mental institution a little bit too much. I think people have resonated the name with that. So I wanted something a little bit more broader that truly describe more the scope. I deal with more just the psychosis of the mind. It deals with multiple dimensions. It deals with the power of the id. So it's very broad, and I want something that kind of I could play with.
Well, wow, I got to tell you, as a horror comic, it's really tremendous. It just scares the heck out of me. I was reading, when it first starts out, it starts out in a very kind of calm place as a family at a circus, looks like. And all of a sudden, things go awry, and this power manifests itself in a really horrific way. And then the next thing we know, it's like 17 years later. And, God, he looks so creepy. I mean, the art really works well with the script, I thought. Coloring and stuff like that. I don't know how you found the artist, but I think that the artist works with your script particularly well.
Yeah, the artist is actually an Italian artist named Federico De Luca. I was introduced to him by my twin brother, actually, so I have to give him credit for that. Mm-hmm. So we're very competitive, but we help each other out as well. Mm-hmm. I was working with some other artists. The original artist was Matthew Dow Smith. When I first came up with the concept, he was actually working a short story for me. The first appearance actually was a Negative Burn number 48 mm-hmm. in 1997. Mm-hmm. I did a stream of consciousness story. It was just like an 8-page story. I was just playing with the character first, trying to get a feel for it. And Matthew was going to be the artist for it, but something happened. Our schedules didn't quite align. Mm-hmm. So we went on with best friends. We're really good friends. He did a cover for me for My Bitter One. So I first started thinking of variant covers. So I said, let's get Matt, because he was the first guy that worked with me on this concept.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Well, Federico, your brother introduced you. Was that through his work? Is that how he came across this for you?
Well, Joe was actually, before Aftershock started up, he was actually working some series himself, mm-hmm. proposals, mm-hmm. and Federico was actually drawing a story for him. Mm-hmm. So I had seen this because, you know, we share everything. Mm-hmm. So he was showing me pages as they come in, and I was like, I said, when the other artists I was dealing with about a year or so ago, just our schedules didn't quite work, and he was getting so busy with other work, and I needed someone who would come in and could work on the project. Joe just recommended Federico, so I looked at his work again, and we just started Facebooking, and we just really hit it off. Mm-hmm. We're both big softball players. He lives in Berlin, Germany, mm-hmm. so I love modern technology. We can work, and I can see pages like in an hour because he can just, you know, Facebook it to me or send me an email.
Right, because that's the thing. I help out as an indie comic myself, and the writer lives here in Florida, and then the artist lives up in North Carolina, but the colorist is actually out in the Philippines. So thank goodness for the internet. I have to say about that. Talk to me a little bit about the characters, because there's a wonderful sequence in there where we talk about Alexander, and he actually says three words, and I would never reveal what those three words are because they're pivotal to the story, in my opinion. And I just, when we get to find out what all that stuff was, I was creeped out. I mean, that was just a well-written part to me. I just thought that was so incredibly smart the way you do it. Because he doesn't speak after the trauma in his childhood, but apparently he has said three words that you have picked out. And I'd have to say, when I got to that page, it was so well done. It was just one of those things that, you know, you get a chill when you read that stuff. So I thought that was particularly great, James.
Well, thanks. We always like to hear as a writer that someone's resonating with what you had to say. They get what you're trying to say. Yeah. What happened after he had his he went to a kind of constant state. He kind of withdrew into himself. Mm-hmm. So he's basically been percolating inside his mind for the last 16 years. Mm-hmm. And it's just like I said, when he's released from his state, I can't give away too much.
Like, you know? Oh yeah. Oh no. Don't do that.
Yeah. The thing is, was it just that time, or did the person who was helping him, the one who promoted that? So that's a question to be answered next couple of issues.
Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, of course, it's a well-named book because it's called Mindbender, because let's just say that things happen that name has a real effect on other people. And it's not only that he can do things himself, but he's able to enlist other people's help, it seems like. And to what extent, we don't know at the beginning. But again, there's this creepy part where all of a sudden somebody says, I'm awake now, and what do you want? And all of a sudden he goes, I understand, in small words. And again, I got this creepy feeling about it. And things go on with that. It's such a smartly done book because while things are going on with him, things are happening in the world around him that we don't think that he's got an influence on, but apparently he does. We don't know to what extent, like you're saying, in the books ahead we're going to find out. But you get a real strong sense that all that time, he hasn't necessarily just been sitting there not thinking of things, that he may actually have been doing stuff in his mind or getting ready for this time to happen.
Yeah, right. So, like I say, he's been in his mind for basically the last 16 years and withdrawn to himself. Mm-hmm. So when he comes back out to the press, it's going to be a shock to him because the last time he was here, he was 7. Mm-hmm. So he still had to go to that stage where he's become an adult in his head because he's got to get everything in his mind. His body's an adult, but his brain isn't yet. Mm-hmm. It's a stage. He will mature as he goes quickly, mm-hmm. but it's just the adaptation going back to the human form. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about the person who is waiting for him. Let's talk about Birdie. Yeah, he's the main supporting character in the storyline. Mm-hmm. And obviously, he's hearing a voice that mm-hmm. no one else is hearing. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we're playing with, is he really hearing a real voice, or is that just in his head? Because mm-hmm. the person obviously was a mental patient at one time. Mm-hmm. So people have been waiting for his arrival.
That's interesting because, he does talk about the fact that he's ready and stuff like that. All this stuff just creeped me out, and I'm not one that gets creeped out usually. I read a lot of horror in my day. And so to me, to be able to actually read this book, and I thought that the plotting was really good, the pacing was really terrific. I do want to get to the psychiatrist and the lady psychiatrist.
Margot Amos is her name.
Yeah, she's quite something. She actually tries to do different things than the main person in charge of the institution wants to have happen, apparently.
Dr. Tomatano.
Yeah, I like her character because, you know, I'm a big believer in strong female characters in comics, and she is one of those characters that you root for. I sit there and I pull for her because she's trying to do something a little different, and the people in charge don't necessarily want that to happen. And for whatever reasons, I'm sure we'll find out as we go along, but she is really quite the innovator as far as things like that goes. And so we begin to really want her to succeed. And of course, she's got a lot to fight against in order to make things happen. So I really like the character. I always think it's a great thing to do to have a strong female like this one here. And so I really wanted to tell you that I like her a lot. She's somebody I'm going to really be pulling for as the book continues.
As the series goes on, she'll be a lot more prominent character as well. I mean, in issue two, she's in there a little bit, but in issue three and four, she'll become a lot more than just a supporting character. A big focal point of the storyline.
Okay. She talks with several of the other inmates in the institution, and you get a sense from her, from listening to her dialogue, that she is not willing to give up on people, which I really liked. And, you know, of course, the other people are all basically saying, ah, they're here, who cares? But she's not going to go down that road, and I like that. How did the inspiration come to make her that kind of character?
Her personality is actually based on my cousin, who I named her after, Margot.
Oh.
Yeah, she's a little headstrong and stubborn sometimes, but I love her to death. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love strong female characters. I mean, when I was at Caliber, I wrote Black Miss, and that was a female lead who was a strong, independent woman. Mm-hmm. They're more interesting to me at times. I sometimes prefer to write women, though I'm not a woman, obviously, but I just love to write their, because they're so driven, they're so emotional, they're so passionate. So there's so many different layers of personality you can put in a woman.
Mm-hmm. See, I think that's a great thing. But on the other hand, I have a lot of female friends who want a woman to be maternal all the time. You know, they want to talk their problems out. They don't want to fight or everything, things like that. They're going to sit down and discuss their feelings and stuff like that. And I always kind of feel that limits a female character. But you take that kind of thing and move it to the next level as her being like a psychiatrist. She can actually move forward and move the characters along because of that. So I thought that was a real nice way to do that with her as a character.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that.
She's a great one. The guy that's in charge of the institution, he's got to die horribly at some point. I'm just convinced. But you never know.
He's fun to write, actually.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he based on anybody?
Not really. He's a caricature of people I know, like a mixture of certain people. But he's so fun to write because he's so arrogant. His dialogue is so fresh to me. It's everything you want to say sometimes. You've always, like in modern society, you want to reserve what you say. He has no filter. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of fun. Mm-hmm.
There's also a part where we kind of get a metaphysical thing going on. You see this person falling through what looks to be like a night sky or universe or something like that.
Alex?
And yeah, you get to see Alex moving along and those kinds of things. That's a real surprise to me because, you know, we've been kind of led to believe up to this point that there's nothing really going on. And yet when we see this sequence where he talks about he gets to witness the largest nebula and things like that, you get to understand that, just like I was saying before, he wasn't necessarily just sitting there doing nothing, that there was activity going on. And it's a really great sequence. I really like that. And I thought the art, again, was something that really worked well with that.
Yeah, it's actually my favorite page in the issue.
Oh, really? Oh, because it's really powerful. It's lots of maroons and purples and blues and things like that in it. And it's funny that he's falling instead of, you know, you would expect something like that. He'd be flying. If you've ever dreamed about this kind of a sequence, you end up flying and you're looking down and things. But he actually seems to be falling, and I thought that was a very unique way to handle that.
Thanks. And that's what Margot sees in his eyes when she looks into them.
Oh.
So she's seeing this with them.
Wow, it's really, really cool. I really like the way that. See, this the great thing about this book, and I really like, is that you're doing things that I haven't read before. Well, I've read a lot of these kinds of books, and you know, people will look in their eyes, and what they'll see is something horrid, terrible monsters, or something like that. Looking back, but he's not that kind of a person inside when she looks.
No.
And I was surprised by that. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I've always kind of considered this storyline to be a psychological thriller, is how I kind of verbalize it in my head. because I guess I know where it's going a little bit more too. But
right, it's really something.
I always like to write things that you don't expect and go take twists. You know, any good writer would do that. You can take a reader to a pathway, and then you go somewhere totally different with it.
Yeah. Well, we get towards the end of the book, and let's just say he's someplace, and then the visuals change as to where he is or what he's doing. And once again, that was a big surprise to me. And then, of course, then we get, you know, you can't do these kinds of things without the government somewhere running around. And so we get a little bit of a hint as to what might be happening in the next issue as we get along with what happens when all this takes place.
Yeah, he's been observed for a while, just, you know. So
have they been, are they, well, of course, this is something that you might be revealing sometime soon, but have they been going through the head of the institution, or are they using cameras somehow looking at it? Can you give any kind of hint without spoiling things?
Yeah, I can't really go there yet with it. But there's a couple of factions at play here, different characters that are combative with each other. So it's not what it appears. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, which I always love that in a comic. I like to be led down the primrose path and then suddenly find out all that stuff I thought was not real. So you're doing a good job with that. So Mindbender number one, is this available? When's it going to be available if it's not out yet?
It's going to be released in May, early May of 2017. Available for order right now through the Diamond Catalog until the end of the month. And then this first story could be 5 issues. Mm-hmm. And then the sales willing, then I've got a second story up ready to go. Mm. And we'll just see how it goes. I mean, so like any independent comic, you're going to say it's an ongoing if sales permit it. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm just going to say it's 5 issues, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
Okay, very good. Because I have to say, it's a pretty strong book. Like I said, I don't know what you're going to do next. And to me, as a comics reader, that is the best thing I can say about a comic.
That's what I want to hear.
Honestly, I read so many comics, and I go, okay, this is where she says, yeah, there it goes, okay. But this book, I'm turning the pages going like, what is happening here? What is going on? So I really like that in the book. What's your experience as far as comics goes? Is this your first book? Have you been? You said you did some other work before.
No, I've been in the industry since 1993, actually, off and on. Mm-hmm. I started in 1993. My first published work was Negative Burn number 1 from Caliber Comics. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you know anything about Negative Burn. It ran 50 issues from Caliber. It was an award-winning magazine. Mm-hmm. It's an anthology. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Joe, myself, and Chuck Moore created it. Joe pretty much ran with it, particularly after issue number 5. Mm-hmm. Name Desperado Comics, he ran with, I think, another 25 issues. So it's been, you know, around 70 issues published.
Wow.
It's probably one of the most respected anthologies of the last 30, 40 years.
Wow. I have to tell you, because anthologies don't necessarily sell well these days. So to have a successful one, that's quite an accomplishment.
Well, when we did first start Nigga Burn, we had Brian Ballin work for us. He was in every issue of Nigga Burn, the first 50 issues. He did at least one page. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had, gosh, you name it, they were probably in it at one time. Mobius was in there. Alan Moore did stuff in there. Mm-hmm. I think we had a Neil Gaiman piece at one time. But it was a place where anybody who had any personal work they wanted to do, mm-hmm. short stories or whatever they wanted to do, you could go there for it. Because it's not something Marvel DC would do. Mm-hmm. Because one thing, it may have been 16 pages or maybe 8 pages, but it's just something personal that would let them do whatever they wanted to do.
Is that still in print? Is that like online where you can get that?
You probably could get them. We did a few best of Negative Burns over the years. I mean, I believe Image may have printed some, because when we did 50 issues of Caliber, and then when Caliber folded, Joe created his own company called Desperado Publishing, and they first went through Image. Mm-hmm. They were like a partnering with Image, and then he went to solo, then went to IDW. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's some trade paperbacks still available through there.
Cool.
eBay.
Is it on electronic? Because like Comixology and stuff is a great place to catch up on these kinds.
I very much doubt if it's electronic. Oh. I'll ask Joe about that.
Rats. Because that sounds like that would be the perfect avenue for that.
That's actually a good idea. I might look into that.
Okay.
The thing is, it's an anthology. We have to make sure that all the creators are okay with this releasing again. Because basically when you publish an anthology, it's a one-time agreement for creator-owned books, stories. Make sure you have reprint rights is what it comes down to. That'd be the main thing holding it back.
Now, how did you get to Scout Comics with this book? Because I've interviewed Brendan Danina, and I talked with him a couple of weeks ago in this podcast. And it just seems like somehow he attracts these really creative people to these things. And like I said, things I haven't read before, which, you know, somebody who's been reading as long as I have, that's a real treat. Did you approach Brendan? How did this happen?
Yeah, that's a funny story. Let me go back a little. I'll come right back to that question. Let me go back and finish off a little bit of the history of my
Sure.
While I'm thinking about it, I was a managing editor of Caliber Comics from 1994 through 2000, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, in Caliber Comics, we're Brian Michael Bendis got his first work, David Mack got his first work, Joe got there, I was there, Mike Perkins. We all started around the same time. Mm-hmm. To me, Scout is similar to Caliber in a way. Because Caliber, we did mostly create our own books, but it should do your vision. And it was a lot of fun. The distributor wars pretty much destroyed it. That's why I call it distributor wars. But yeah, because you know all these distributors run a business, owing money. So Caliber had a cash flow problem at the end. All the distributors going out, they don't pay us. We can't pay the printing. So that was the main problem with Caliber. It's just it ended because of cash flow. Then after I did that, while I was there, I wrote Apparition. I wrote Black Mist. Did some stuff in Negative Burn. Did an anthology called New Worlds. And we probably published about, I don't know, we did maybe 1,000 books while I was there, maybe 800, something like that. And we became the number 8 publisher. So for a black and white industry, when I started there with 0.11% of the market, and by the time, within 3 years when Joe and I helped with it, it became 1.08. So we're in a big growth spurt there. And then the market collapsed.
Oh, crud. Do you think the market would be more open to it now instead of like it was back at that time?
No, I mean, the market back then was open to what we did. I mean, like if Scott was back there now, the industry is a lot smaller than it used to be. I mean, you're talking about the 90s. You know, that's when Spawn came out, and that's when X-Men sold 6 million copies. You had a lot of speculators there. So that's when Caliber started. It was in the 89 to 99, basically. So you had a lot more readers, a lot more retail stores back then. So I think Scout would have been much more successful back then, to be honest with you. It's just a different market nowadays. Everything's online. So I'm looking at print numbers. It's a new world with the online, the Comixology and stuff. So that gives you a chance to expand it more, so everything's more readily accessible. So that is a good part about nowadays comics. Then after I left Caliber in the end of 99, beginning of 2000, I did X-Men Unlimited for Marvel. Did some work in Desperado in the 2007, around that time. But I got into the corporate world, so I got out of comics for like 10, 12 years, pretty much. But I lived through my brother. He was doing his Desperado, and then he did his Aftershock. And when he started up Aftershock with Mike Bartz and some other people, it got my creative fire going again. So it's like that's how I got in the industry. Actually, Joe got in the industry before I did, like a year before I did. And I said, if he can do this, I can do it. Better. when he does, if he can do this, I can do this again. And I've had this Mike Manbert issue one was actually written in 2003. And the artist at that time was Lawrence Campbell, so was attached to it. And he does like a lot of the Hellboy type of spinoffs now. BRPD, I think it is.
BPRD, I think maybe the other way around. I never can remember.
That's a foreign initial word.
It starts with B and ends with D.
But then you get exclusive with Marvel, and then now it's exclusive with the Dark Horse, so I had to go somewhere else with it. But anyway, so then I got back into the Scout. Okay, let's go back to Scout now. Okay. Well, when I first started to think about doing this again, because I had kids, and they took all my time. So then my kids are middle teenagers now, so they don't take as much time for me. You know, I don't have to change the diapers. I don't have to get up at 3 in the morning to do it. So I have more energy now. Okay. So I can write again. So I started hooking up with Joe and looking at artists. And he gave me, you know, a couple of people I worked with. And then last summer, I was in the Heroes Con. And I was getting ready to start pushing this property around. And I had a different artist attached at the time before I got into Federico. And then I was reading up online. I'm trying to familiarize myself with the modern publishers because there's a lot of new ones that weren't around when I was around. And so I came with the Scout and I started reading some stuff about it. So this company sounds interesting. Because they're like Aftershock. Scout is a smaller version of Aftershock's way they're built, I guess. I guess because Aftershock has some Hollywood connections. They have people who work in the studios, the Mandalay Pictures and so forth, and movie producers. Scout, the head of Scout, if you know, is Brennan, the CEO. I mean, he's the head of TV media for Macmillan Publishing in New York. So he has all these connections. So I thought that was interesting. So I went to the Heroes Con last year in Charlotte, which is a great show, by the way. I have met so many great artists here. I mean, in 1993, I met Michael Gatos. I'm not sure. He's a co-creator of Jessica Jones and Alias. And it, one of my first published books with Michael Gatos. So I've had nothing but luck at Charlotte.
Wow. But, great.
So now I was talking to AC Medina, who writes Elasticator for Scouts. When I think it was their second book they did. Scouts been around since November of 2015, I think. So I think it was their second release or third. And I just started talking to him. I said, tell me a little bit about Scout because I'm looking for a publisher. And he's a big help. He just told me all the details. And so I had sent in to them through their website and I didn't respond in like 30 days. And I was talking to AC and I gave him a copy of the proposal and he handed it to him, basically. And And then Michael Sanchez, who's editorial director, was interested in it, so we started chatting a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then with Alan, I said, well, let me read your book. So I said, here's some things you can do better, sort of speak, or corrections I'm not do better. Okay, he's a really talented new writer. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, here's some things I can help scout with. Guys, mm-hmm. look at marketing, because of my background, being a manager of caliber, I have a lot of experience. Mm-hmm. And so I started talking to him, and I wrote this little manifesto of like, I don't know, 12 pages, 13 pages, said, here's some ideas I have for you guys. Mm-hmm. Cause I want to help you guys grow a little mm-hmm. bit. Mm-hmm. And then he put me in contact with Brendan, and I got offered to be the publisher. Mm-hmm. So they want me on board, and it's a great fit, actually. Mm-hmm. Wow. So now I'm the publisher scout.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's terrific.
Yeah, I've been there since September.
Oh, wow. That's great. Man, congratulations. That's quite a place to land, because you touched on something I was going to bring up, was the fact that Brendan has all these connections with movie makers and TV people and things like that. And when I read your book, there was something that screamed to me about that this would make a great movie or like a sci-fi channel TV show or something like that. Do you harbor ideas of getting that to happen?
Well, I would love for it to happen. I mean, it's not my goal of writing, but I'm not ever going to say no to listening to them. my bucket list, you know, for comics, you know, had a movie.
Well, because as I like to say, every comic is like a proposal for a TV show or a movie.
Yeah, it was a storyboard, basically. A comic is a storyboard mm-hmm. for movies. That's why you see so many get adapted, mm-hmm. because they already have it all in front of them. This is what it's going to look like.
Because mm-hmm. it's just cool. I mean, I could see this on even like a horror channel or something like that would pick this up and make it happen, because it's got mystery to it. It's got great characters, I think, and the pacing is fast enough to keep you don't bog down. When there's dialogue going on, it doesn't slow the book down, which I really like, and surprises, as I like to say, that always gets me, you know, because the art will pull you in, but it's the story that keeps you there, in my opinion. I think that this is a great marriage of art and plot and script, because I think you guys have put something together really special, and I'd love to see this on either on a big screen or a small screen.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah, when I write, I'm more about characterization. That's always been my favorite part of writing. Characters have to have personality. Mm-hmm. And it's a certain thing about action. Of course, I love action, don't get me wrong. But if you don't care about the characters, then you don't care about the comic.
Right.
So it's important to make these characters believable and three-dimensional and breathe.
Yep. Otherwise, it's just a video game.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I don't care about that. That's why I don't play video games, because I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care enough to spend 8 hours a day on a video game. Cause
just kill off a character. Oh, well, so what?
Yeah, we'll come back again, and we'll try that again. See, with your story, I don't know what you're going to do with Alexander. I don't know where this is all going to go. And, of course, that makes me want to keep going. You know, I want to know what in the heck you're going to do. What's going to happen to this guy? Because, you know, as a young man, he's been through so much already. And there's so much that's yet to happen to him. And I can only imagine the kind of things you have in store for him in the next four issues. So that's going to be something else.
No, thanks.
I would like to see, like I mentioned Comixology, too. This would make a great book on Comixology, I think.
Yes, we are getting set up on Comixology right now.
That's right, he talked about that.
Yeah, we just had to get the PDFs formatted correctly.
Yeah, that takes a little doing. I know I've done that. I did a format for the book that I mentioned I was working with. I had to format the book for them. And it takes a little doing, but it's not terrible. You can get it set through. So five issues, and you've got another story in mind for this one here.
I'm pretty ready for it to go. Yeah.
Oh, well, did you write the script, or do you have it in mind?
I've got a plot out. Yeah.
Very cool. So is it likely that you could get the same artist back, you know, given that the market warrants that, of course?
Oh, the market warrants that. Well, you know, I have to ask him that question, but I would love to. I mean, even if we do like a couple of miniseries, give him a break to catch back up, you know, breathe air. But yeah, I would love to keep Federico, and I've loved working with him. He's a great guy, and we just seem to mesh really well. He understands what I'm thinking. I mean, it's only been probably two panels we've had to go back and redo, but that's about it, and that's really rare for an artist and writer. But it's like he reads my mind for the most part.
Wow. Boy, that's a rare occurrence in comics, because so oftentimes there's a lot of discussion that has to happen between a writer, and they have to kind of communicate what it is they want. And like my friend, what he does is he'll often take photographs of himself in the pose that he wants to see in the comic. And I don't know, you probably haven't had to do that with him, but you have to do what you have to get the book to be the way you want to be.
I mean, there's a, you know, we always make suggestions. What he'll do, basically, he'll send me a pencil, mm-hmm. break down the page, and I'll say, well, this one a little bit more dramatic, possibly, or let's change the angle for that one. But that's very rare that we have to do that. Mm-hmm. The way I look at it, I've written a full script. So it's a written full script. I have my idea how it should look, mm-hmm. okay, in my head, obviously. I said, but you're the artist. You may have a better interpretation than I do. Mm-hmm. I'm not so arrogant. I think my way has to be done all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes he's in panel, so, oh, I didn't think of it that way. That's much better. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's a give and take.
Yeah. Okay. Are you a visual thinker when it comes to things like that?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay. So you have basically TV, or the thing happens in your head as you're writing it. You see it.
Yeah, I see it in my head, and I try to describe it as much as I can. I don't know if you've ever seen Alan Moore's script. Have you ever seen a full script from Alan Moore?
No.
Oh, it is so detailed. I mean, you get one panel, it could be a page or two, you know, but mm-hmm. I'm descriptive. But once you get a relationship with the artist, that description can come down, because once you have that established, he knows what I'm talking about, you can reduce what you're asking for, and he'll be able to read it and do it. Mm-hmm. But I know my first scripts are always a lot more detailed and tighter, mm-hmm. but as the series go on, I get more comfortable with the artist. Then it's kind of like, well, he's in this room here, he's on the left, this guy's on the right, you can fill in the details, mm-hmm. so you don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun with Federico. I mean, he's Italian, he lives in Berlin, Germany, so I have a very international flavor here. And he speaks English great. Well, he writes English great. I haven't really spoken to him in person yet, So it's kind of interesting. But we chat all the time on Messenger.
Which is cool. You should Skype at some point and talk to each other.
Yeah, well, I really want to. I'm trying to get him to come over to New York in October.
That would be fun, because that's where I saw Brendan the last, was up at the New York Comic Con.
And that's when I got announced as publisher. That was my first.
Oh, really? When did they do that? Because I was there and I talked with Brendan and I saw the booth and stuff, but I never heard that one. I didn't know that.
Oh, that's remind me to thank Brendan for that. we announced it officially September the 1st.
Okay.
Wow. I had to wait a certain time of my day job to announce it. And that was my first public appearance at Scout.
Oh, cool. Wow, that was something.
Yeah, so I'll be doing some conventions this summer, you know, as me and as Scout. And if I go as myself, I always bring Scout stuff with me. Mm-hmm. Scout's a great new company. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of potential. And the main thing we do is get retailers to know who we are, mm-hmm. and get readers to know who we are.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. That's the biggest challenge for an up-and-rising company, is to get the word out.
It definitely does. Yeah.
So that's the hard thing about it. This is why, you know, social media, I think, is one of the great ways to do it.
Oh, this is so much better than it was in the 90s. This aspect of the comics is so much better. You get so much exposure so much quicker, mm-hmm. to so many more people that you wouldn't normally get.
Mm-hmm. Which is really cool. Now, I don't want to get too inside baseball, but as the publisher, what is it that you do particularly for Scout?
Okay. What we do, we have a team. I review submissions. We have a team, people who review. We have about five of us who review submissions. Mm-hmm. For them, I'm not going to name names. I don't want anybody, you know, to go after them if they don't, you know, reject them. But mm-hmm. it has to be pretty much a unanimous decision. I mean, there might be one of 4-1, but you know, we all have to have an agreement that we want to publish this book. Mm-hmm. What I also do, I do all the scheduling. Mm-hmm. My goal is to have at least two issues in hand before I solicit. Mm. My goal is to make sure no books are late.
Mm. Good man. And
with creator-owned books, you're at their mercy a lot. Mm-hmm. So from experience, believe me, because I did it for 6 years at Caliber, mm-hmm. it's always important to have as much in-house as you can, because some creators get really addicted to video games, some medical emergency is going to happen, and creator-owned books, this isn't their full livelihood most of the time.
Right.
There's some who do it, because in independent comics, you know, you don't get rich from it.
No.
You know, you can make decent money off it, but for the most part, we do this because we love it. Mm-hmm. Next guy, a lot of the stuff we're doing is we're breaking in a lot of new creators, mm-hmm. and we're giving them a chance. That's one thing we did at Caliber. A lot of big names today came from Caliber because we saw something in them that we liked and saw they had talent. Mm-hmm. That's who I see at Scout now. There's a lot of new creators that haven't been published before that we're publishing. And my view is I'm trying to find the next wave of superstars.
Mm. Well, that's great. That's great, because there was a time when we didn't have Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo doing stuff. You know, there were other people.
They had to start somewhere.
That's right. And that's a good place to do it. So that's great. That sounds like a nice challenge and something that's a lot of fun to go with. Now, you and I have talked about the fact that you're one of a pair of identical twins. And, of course, I am one of a pair of identical twins, too. And it's just interesting to me because my brother and I have been fans of comics since we were little.
We have too. And thing is, see, you and I are both the oldest ones, so we're the superior twin.
That's right. I was 2 minutes ahead, and you were how many minutes ahead?
7 minutes.
Oh, ahead. Man, you're farther.
Oh, much farther.
See, my brother always likes to say, though, we were conceived at the same time, so I... Yeah.
Technically, I guess we were, but we won the fight. We got out first.
That's right. We won the race. That was the important thing. What's it like, though, to have... Because, you know, I understand people always ask me, what's it like to be a twin? And I always have to tell people, what's it like not to be? Because I don't know.
No, that's funny. I say the same thing. You know, is it weird to be a twin? What's it like? Is it weird to not be a twin? To me, I don't know anything else.
Yeah, because there were a pair of actors that were twins, and one of them got killed in an auto accident. And the other guy, it took a long time for him to recover because you're so used to the other person being there. And I always got a kick because, you guys are in, like, the comics management area as well as creation and stuff like that. It sounds like there's some competitiveness between the two of you. But
it's in good nature. It's in good nature.
Yeah, everybody. Well, we all do that in some level and stuff like that. But it's just kind of funny to me. Again, I feel like asking you what's it like, but on the other, you can't tell anything else. This is what it's always been.
Well, funny. We started reading comics probably around first grade, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. And that way, I was a Marvel guy. Joe and I were both Marvel guys when at our young age. Mm-hmm. And the great thing about having a twin reading comics too is that I only have so much money. He has so much money, so we could buy the Spectrum. Uh-huh. That would read each other's books.
Uh-huh.
So, and then, of course, we did our own comics when we were kids.
Of course.
And it was kind of fun. We had our own comic company. It was J&J Comics. And then we had this agreement one time, so I broke off and got my own comic company. I left them. So it's kind of like now, because we both worked at Caliber, and now he's at Aftershock, and here I'm at Scout. So it's, our childhood is coming to our adulthood now.
Yeah, that's right. You're coming around. You're coming back to where you were before.
We're very competitive, but we're also the biggest supporters. We talk pretty much every day. Very seldom a day goes by that we don't talk. If we don't talk, so we're too busy. Mm-hmm. But, we'll talk at least 3, 4, 5, 6 times a week. Mm-hmm. We talk comics, we talk baseball, we talk sports. Being a twin, you're very, very close. The great thing is we have each other bounce each other ideas off each other, too.
Right. Which is cool. I mean, that's great. What does he think of Mindbender? I just got to ask.
You have to ask him because...
Oh, okay.
Because he'll say something snarky, and kind of sarcastic, I'm sure. he does Black Eyed Kids for Aftershock, right. And I tease him about it all the time. But it's a great series. I mean, he did a good job. I was a little jealous when it came out. Mm-hmm. His artist is really talented. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed seeing it. I think it's the best thing he's done. Mm-hmm. But, when we were at Caliber, he did Curious here, and I was doing Black Miz and Empress and stuff. And the funny thing is, because I did a schedule on the Caliber as well, sometimes I would schedule our books to compete with each other, mm-hmm. to see friends.
So, of course, I have to always, people always ask me, why don't you guys do something together again? Because you did these things, and now, of course, he's Aftershock and you're Scout. That doesn't preclude you guys from, say, writing a story together or coming up with a comic concept.
We've never written a comic together. Now we bounce each ideas off each other, and grown from it. But the closer we ever came, I know, is that he did a Curie number 2, the second launch. He started getting work at, I believe it was Image, and he finished off scripting it. So I kind of helped him script an issue. Mm. That's the closest we ever came to working together, as far as that kind of storyline goes.
Well, I'd like to recommend that. There's another idea I give you for free. If you guys want to do something together, I think that would be fun to read. I'd get a kick out of seeing what kind of things you guys, because, if you're sort of button heads sometimes, that actually will help make a book better than just people who get along. You say, okay, that's, we'll do what you want kind of stuff.
The closest we came to actually doing that, I take that back, there was around 2008 or 2009, we were dealing with some Hollywood TV producers, and we're trying to develop a TV show for Negative Burn.
Mm.
And it was going to be a collection of short stories that were mixed together. Mm-hmm. So each one story going to another story, it all tied together somehow.
Mm. Wow.
So that way we're doing, I had a storyline in there and he had like a thing, so we're going to tie into each other. Mm. That was similar. Okay, we're making storylines that would work, but it wasn't like writing the same script.
Right. I think
that was a fun issue though, but it was too complicated for TV, they said.
Oh.
Yeah, they said it would be too hard to do.
That's right. You're too stupid out here. You can't tell us good stories.
There's your head of them.
Okay, obviously being publishers keeping you busy and Mindbender's keeping you busy, but do you have any other projects in the works that we should be aware of?
Well, I've always got stories back in my head. Yeah, because I'm doing the publishing thing with Scout, it's kind of slowed down my running thing, so I'm going to do Mindbender, and when it runs this course, I'll probably do another story after that. Mm. And I have a couple of stories that I can't really talk about there. I'm still a writer, so mm-hmm. I'm not exclusive to Scout, though I do feel a lot of loyalty to Scout.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a conflict for me to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to say I wouldn't if I had to. I have a couple of stories at other publishers right now that were there before I came to Scout.
Mm-hmm.
and they're still running their course.
I like to see them because this book is really gripping. I mean, I page to page, I'm just going like, what now? And that's the kind of writing I really enjoy. And so I'd like to see, you know, Mindbender come to a great conclusion, which I'm sure it will, and then see you do other things as well, because I just think that's going to be great fun to read.
Yeah, thanks. I've got about three other storylines I have worked on. I just don't know which one I do next. That's all it is.
Well, when that happens, when you get to the next storyline, you'll have to come back and talk with me. Yep. So we can do that, talk about that one too, because I really like this book and I can't wait to see what you're going to do with it. So it's all going to be good stuff, and I like your stuff. And sometime I'll have to talk to your brother and we'll have to compare how the two of you talk about each other kind of stuff.
Yeah, have you met him before?
No, I have not.
I'll hook you up. Just.
Send them my way sometime, and we'll do that, and we'll talk some. Maybe sometime we'll get the two of you on, and then we'll
then that would be fun. We were on the Sci-Fi Channel once together. They interviewed us on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, cool.
In the anti-gravity room.
You know, when I started doing the podcast, my brother said, well, I need to be on there. And I said, well, you know, our voices are too similar. People won't know who's saying things.
Well, that's funny. He said, my mom gets confused sometimes on the phone.
But the funny thing is, my mom was just the opposite. If somebody called and said hello, she knew exactly who it was.
I wish my mom did that. Upstairs on the phone, I said, no, this is not Joe. Yeah, no, this is Jim.
Now, my sister couldn't tell, but my mom knew the second we said hello, the way we said hello, she knew exactly who it was.
Do you still look a lot alike?
Well, actually, see, this is getting a little inside baseball, but I have a beard and he doesn't, and that's the way people do it, because my name is Wayne. They always say with a beard, so it's the W's there, so people know that. He doesn't, and for a while, I was the one wearing glasses, and he wasn't, but now he has glasses, too, so.
Our hair's a little different. He wears it differently than I do.
Oh, yeah, that's the funny thing about twins. We don't want to be too identical.
Right, I know.
We have our
own personality. Still wear the exact same clothes every time we're together. Did your mom ever do that to you?
She did it to us once. She got us in sailor outfits. Yeah. And we love sailor food.
We stopped at first grade. We came home and said, no more.
See, my favorite color is blue and his is red. And so that meant we diverged as far as what kind of things we liked. He's Superman, I'm Batman, as far as those things go. And so they didn't really work to make us similar, you know, all the time. We were able to choose what it is we wanted to do ourselves. So right. I'm sure your parents did some of that, too. They didn't want to make you too similar to each other.
No. I mean, we have a lot of the same interests, but we're different people.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Well, this Mindbender is a terrific book, James. I can't wait to see more of it. Can't wait for issue two. Boy, when I get to see that one, I'm going to be bated breath to get a hold of it because it's a great book. Again, you go to Scout Comics, and, of course, it's in the previews as well. So be sure to order this book. It's a great book. If you're into horror and you're into horror mystery kind of stuff, I think you're going to really enjoy this book. And, James, you know, keep it up, and I can't wait to see more of what you're going to do in the future.
Well, thanks, Wayne. Thanks for talking to me.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's it for this week. Be sure to be back next time when I'll have another great interview with another Scout Comics creator, Philip Kennedy Johnson, creator of Smoketown. But until then, keep reading your comics.